Live from the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, you're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The mission of the Christian Research Institute is to equip believers to always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have with gentleness and respect. To join us on air with your question, dial 888-ASK-HANK, which translates to 888-275-4265. For more information, go online to equip.org. And now, here's Bible Answer Man host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. So good to be in studio as we answer your questions throughout the United States and Canada. Do remember, Monday through Friday at this time, your questions answered live when you dial 888-ASK-HANK. That translates to 888-275-4265. I want to start the broadcast today by just giving you a little bit of my passion with respect to resurrection. I've said this many times on the broadcast. It bears repeating. If you took resurrection out of Scripture, all you would be left with is a torn and tattered document devoid of all meaning. In other words, resurrection is central to our faith. Without it, there is no faith. Indeed, let me go further and say, without it, there is no hope. But think for a moment what resurrection entails. It entails believing that someone dies and comes back to life. Someone has the power to lay down his life and take it up again, thus demonstrating that he is God. And even more, what it entails is that if this is indeed true and verifiable, then the Christian religion trumps everything else. Because if Christ rose from the dead, then we too have hope that we will rise from the dead, immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. And what that then means is that we will live our lives by a completely different standard, no longer fixated on temporary things, but rather focused on the eternal. Our life is a vapor. It's here today, gone tomorrow. We live as though this life is forever, but it's not. Trust me, I look at the obituary page every day, and it is not. In fact, the other day I was looking at the obituaries, and I saw someone that I recognized. And that face was smiling back at me, but no longer in the land of the living. But Scripture says that everyone who has died will be resurrected. Not some, but everyone. Some, however, will be resurrected to eternal conscious torment, some to everlasting life. These are the unequivocal words of Scripture. So Christianity doesn't give us a peaceful way to come to terms with the maladies of life, the difficulties of life, the tragedies of life, but it does give us something far greater, a way to overcome them through the power of Christ's resurrection. Now, all of this is simply prologue to say this. You and I must be equipped to communicate that resurrection is not a fantasy. It is not a wish or a dream. It is a tangible reality. And quite frankly, throughout my ministry, I've spent as much time on this subject as any other. In fact, I have committed myself to developing memorable keys for you so that you can not only know personally the reality of resurrection, but so that you can communicate it to others. I developed an acronym. The acronym is the acronym FEET, not FEET as in F-E-E-T, but rather FEET as in F-E-A-T. The idea being that the resurrection of Jesus Christ is the greatest feat in the annals of recorded history. Christ was able to overcome the power of death. Muhammad couldn't do that. Krishna couldn't do that. Abraham couldn't do that. Moses couldn't do that. No world leader, no religious leader was able to do that. Only Christ was able to do that. And so I've developed a memorable acronym, and that acronym is presented in two resources that I want to make available for your gift this month. Now, we're offering a lot of things, but I don't want to miss this opportunity to focus your mind on resurrection before April 20th is come and gone. Another happening that we didn't really focus in on. Another opportunity that we didn't take advantage of. And so if you go to the website, you'll find two resources, the laminated 4x6 flip chart on resurrection, which gives you the ability to master the proof of resurrection using the acronym FEAT, and also a small book that I wrote called Third Day. And both resources together are available as a package for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. So if you don't have the resources, get them. And this will be a way of equipping you, also a way of supporting this ministry so that we can continue to do the work that God has called us to do together around the world. So check it out on the World Wide Web, equip.org, or simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And do remember, as always, resource consultants, they're standing by, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. Get that package if you don't have it. Even if you do, you might want to give it away to someone else. Check it out. You can find it on the web or just order it via the mail or talk to our wonderful resource consultants. Again, that number, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. So many of you hanging on right to the phone calls. Patrick first, listening in California on KDIA. Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, what's the most concise definition that I can get that would describe what the curse of the law is, as mentioned in Galatians 3:13?
Well, the curse of the law is having to live up to the precepts of the law on your own, which is something that we cannot do. And Christ delivers us from the curse of the law, as Paul points out in Galatians chapter 3, by becoming a curse for us. In other words, he did what we could not do so that the penalty due us because we cannot live up to the precepts of the law is a penalty that has been paid for us.
Okay, so then Romans 7:10 would correlate with that, or I guess it would actually be Romans 7:8. But sin sees in the opportunity afforded by the commandment, producing me every kind of coveting, from apart from the law, sin is dead. In other words, the law was meant to bring life, but it brought death because I was unable to obey it.
Yeah, well, look, that's the idea. I mean, the context demonstrates conclusively that the curse referred to by Paul is the curse of having to live up to God's requirements in our own strength. And Paul points out that all who rely on observing the law are under a curse. And then he says, it is written. He's now quoting the Old Testament. Cursed is everyone who does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law. So Paul is obviously referring to man's moral curse, his inability to observe the requirements of the law apart from Jesus Christ. And that's why he is able to say in Galatians 3:13, we are redeemed from that curse because Christ became a curse for us. He did what we could not do so that the penalty due us is completely paid. In fact, as Jesus said on the cross, using the secular Koine Greek, the street language of the day, tetelestai. In other words, it is paid. The debt has been paid in full.
Could we say then that anyone who has never heard the law, are they still subject to the curse of the law?
Yes, and the reason is because the law, and Paul points this out in Romans chapter 2, the law is written on the tablet of their consciousness, and therefore they are already standing guilty. Jesus made this plain as well when he was talking to a teacher of the law, when he was talking to Nicodemus. He said, light came into darkness, but men loved darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. The problem has never been that men do not have enough light. The problem is always the inverse. Men love darkness. And Paul makes that plain. He says that from one man, God made every nation of men that they should inhabit the whole earth. He determined the exact times and places that they should live, and he did that so that men might reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. So what is Paul saying? God places us in precisely the condition and position so that we can move out of darkness into light. And no matter where we are on the planet, we have the light of creation and also the light that I just mentioned, the light internally written on the canvas of our hearts so that we are without excuse.
Okay, thank you. I think that thoroughly answers my question.
Well, appreciate your call so much, Patrick. It's an important question.
Yeah, very much.
You got it. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Paul next. He's listening in Springfield, Missouri, Bot Radio. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Hank.
Your question today.
Hank. Yeah, my question is dealing with. I'm in college writing a research paper on the argument of creationism versus evolution, and I have at my access all of the different scientific journals which seem to support, you know, the evolution side, and I'm having a difficult time locating resources to, if you will, argue the creation side.
Yeah, you know what? We did a special Origins edition of the Christian Research Journal. It is just killer. It deals with all the substantial evidence demonstrating that the Cambrian explosion or the Cambrian radiation uprooted Darwin's tree of life, that the fossil record emphatically says no, and that so often the arguments that you hear in the evolutionary community are based more on dogmatic assertions than they are on defensible arguments. You look at the ape-to-man icon. In essence, that icon has become the argument. You look at the icon, and there it is. But when you start digging for the details, you find out that the devil is in the details, that the details do not support the evolutionary hypothesis. Not only that, but I would hazard to say that when you go to testable or empirical laws of science, you find that they support the creation model, not the evolutionary model of origins. Now, obviously, I'm talking about macro evolution, not microevolution. Certainly there are changes within kinds, but the whole notion that kinds evolve into other kinds takes a great deal of Darwinian devotion. I mean, think about a 3,000-pound hippo-like animal evolving into a 300,000-pound whale with a tail. That must surely stretch credulity beyond the breaking point, because the time frame simply is not conducive to developing the blowholes and the sonar and skin that's impermeable to water and all of these kinds of things. This is simply something that people believe because they have a very ferocious faith in that direction. But I think we do far better not to follow faith in fantasy, but rather faith founded on irrefutable fact. And this Origins edition of the journal, when I say it's killer, that's no exaggeration. It's the best of the best in terms of refuting the evolutionary paradigm.
Okay, Hank, I appreciate that information. I also recall you referring to Stephen Meyer's Darwin's Dilemma.
Yes. You know, if you want to see this in audio form or in CD form or DVD form, what's really fantastic is we have Privileged Planet, we have Darwin's Dilemma, we have Stephen C. Meyer's Darwin's Doubt, the explosive origin of animal life in the case for intelligent design, I think is the subtitle. But again, all of that information you can find on the web. But this Origin edition of the Christian Research Journal, you can't do without it. In fact, if you can't afford it as a student, let me know. My privilege to send it to you as a gift, so hang on. We're coming to station break. We'll be right back in just a few moments with more answers right here. Stay tuned.
It's often the most vitriolic notions of God that get the most play in academia, politics, media, and thus, the home. And that's why many people carry around untrue beliefs about Him. But we want to help you see truth clearly by sending you a powerful book by Paul Copan called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. So call 888-7000-CRI with your gift and request it. 888-7000-CRI. We'll be back with Hank Hanegraaff right after this. God is a bully, a murderer, and an oppressor. These are some of the most blatant and insidious lies about our Creator that exist today, yet millions believe them, and many Christians struggle to stand against them with truth. That's why we want to send you a copy of a powerful 252-page reassuring defense by Dr. Paul Copan called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God. Biblical, reasonable, and readable, Is God a Moral Monster equips you to stand for truth about God with gentleness and respect, prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks the reason for the hope that you have. So please request your copy today. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. So call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. With the vast amount of information flooding the internet, how can you determine what's true? How can you be certain that what you're viewing is reliable? Well, equip.org is a safe haven with content you can trust. Content that has been well researched and designed to deepen your discernment skills and help equip you to defend the faith. At equip.org, you can search articles, books, and videos, listen to the Bible Answer Man right from your computer, or listen to an Ask Hank program where Hank takes just a few minutes to answer important questions about the Bible and Christianity. You can also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, read our blog, or receive special benefits by signing up for our weekly e-newsletter. Don't founder in the sea of misinformation. Make equip.org your homepage today. Again, the address is equip.org. New atheists and best-selling authors such as Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett often point to the God of the Old Testament to justify their claims about the implausibility of His existence and the stupidity of those who believe in God. But rather than fall for their rhetoric and emotive stereotypes presented by Dawkins and others, we must commit ourselves to become so familiar with the truth that we recognize lies about God instantly when they surface. Paul Copan's book called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God is a reassuring and helpful tool that will help you do this. That's why we hope you'll request a copy today as our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI,
or go online at equip.org. Rather than fall for the emotional rhetoric presented by new atheists such as Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett, we must become so familiar with the truth, we recognize their lies instantly when they surface. Paul Copan's remarkable book titled, Is God a Moral Monster?, will help you do just that. And this reassuring resource is our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. So call 888-7000-CRI with your gift and request it. 888-7000-CRI. Well, now let's rejoin your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you, Randy. Right back to our phone callers next. Malik listening in Columbus, Ohio, Sirius XM 131. Hi, Malik.
Hi, how you doing, Hank?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about me and some people from my church, my pastor, and a couple others had went to go check out that Noah movie this past weekend, and were just terribly grieved by what we saw. And it was just so far from the truth and so far fetched that I just was really curious as to what the goal and the agenda was of the people that produced the movie, because clearly they didn't read the Bible before they put it together.
Yeah, you know, the director-producer, Aronofsky, he is what is called an auteur. In other words, he's an artist. He has an agenda, which you allude to. He's trying to communicate a message. In fact, he's probably more concerned with communicating a message than reaching a mass audience. And he's to be commended for that. But unfortunately, the reason that you felt grieved in your spirit is this is Jewish paganism. And it is attempting to find a balance between radical environmentalism and radical humanism. And what you end up with is a compromise between the two as opposed to a biblical worldview. Indeed, let me say this, the movie is less based on a biblical worldview than it is on the Jewish pseudepigraphal intertestamental book, the Book of Enoch. So you have a pseudepigraphal Jewish intertestamental book that guides much of the movie. For example, in Enoch, you have the genesis, as it were, for the movie of the Watchers. That's where the whole idea of the Watchers comes from. And the Watchers, of course, according to Enoch, teach men to make swords and knives and shields and breastplates and make known to them the metals of the earth and the art of working them. But the children of the Watchers begin to sin against birds and beasts and reptiles and fish and to devour one another's flesh and to drink blood. By the way, a sense of where you get this radical environmentalism. And so God decides to heal the earth through a deluge that will destroy everyone except Noah, because the whole earth has been corrupted through the works that were taught by the quote-unquote watchers that you find in the Book of Enoch. Now, what's interesting about all of this from my perspective is that there are corrupted flood accounts. Whether you have the corrupted flood account that's found in the Book of Enoch, or Eridu Genesis, or the Babylonian Epic of Gilgamesh, or the Epic of Atrahasis, they're all corrupted flood accounts because they view the flood through the opaque lens of paganism. But what do you have with the biblical account? You don't have an account where capricious gods clutter the text, or where you have a cube-shaped ark that isn't seaworthy, or you have an inversion of how the birds go out, the raven and the dove, but rather you have that which corresponds to reality and makes sense. So what you can say about the corruptions is that they do point to a common heritage, which is a real flood, a real deluge that is imprinted on the collective consciousness of humanity and is found in pure, unadulterated form in the pages of the Bible. Now, a lot of people think that the Noah film is going to drive people into the Bible, but unless we have answers to the questions that people raise, oftentimes they're going to be left thinking that the Bible is as much fantasy as the movie itself was.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of got the impression that if people don't pick up the Bible and they read for themselves, then it's going to like really twist a whole lot of people's thinking about what kind of God is, because in the movie it didn't even really appear that Noah really, I mean, he heard in a couple of dreams, but it didn't appear that he had, it made God seem really distant and cold, and that he's not a God of relationship. And then they always alluded to him as just the creator, which didn't really seem like it had any kind of personal feel to it. And that God is just, isn't really there for us, that man rose up. So I wasn't sure if it was like, more of like if it was like New Age teaching and stuff that was infused into it or what it was, but I just knew it wasn't scriptural. So.
Yeah, and I think that this is something that we're very, very interested in from the perspective of apologetics. And indeed, we commissioned John McAteer to write an article for an upcoming issue of the Christian Research Journal on this, because from the point of view of cultural apologetics, this film is a gift. But what I mean by that is if we are trained to always be ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within us with gentleness and with respect, we can take the radical environmentalism or the radical paganism or the humanism, which isn't based on a biblical reflection, but rather a humanistic reflection, we can take those elements and use them as springboards or opportunities to share what is that which corresponds to reality. In other words, what is that which is in essence and in fact true? So it is a gift if, in fact, you can use the objections as springboards. And to that end, I've actually incorporated in my new daily e-truths, which are sent to the inboxes of those who subscribe to the daily e-truth, some videos that help answer questions. For example, a lot of people will say, look, Noah's flood is a myth no matter whether you find it in the Epic of Gilgamesh or you find it in the Bible. Why? Because if, in fact, the floodwaters covered the tallest mountains, and usually the example that's given is Mount Everest, well, then the floodwaters had to be at 29,055 feet or 20 feet over the tallest peak of Everest. And if that is the case, everybody would have been so high that they wouldn't have had sufficient oxygen, and therefore the 8 people and all the animals would have died anyway or frozen to death. And thus, again, whether you find it in the Epic of Gilgamesh or Atrahasis or Eridu Genesis or in the film that is based on the Book of Enoch, it's a mythological tale on any count. But in reality, there's an answer to that question. In fact, the most systemic thing that needs to be communicated is that from a biblical perspective, there's no real indication whether the flood was global with respect to the world or universal with respect to humanity. Not that there's not an answer, but that answer isn't found in the Bible. It's found elsewhere in God's book of Revelation, which we find in general revelation. In other words, the universe that he created and put his imprimatur on. Bottom line of what I am saying is that if we can give answers, we can use those answers as opportunities to be a witness to a lost and searching world.
Amen. Thank you for that. That gave me, I think, some valuable tools to be able to use going forward. And thanks for the answer.
You got it. And again, the article is coming out in the very near future. You know what? Let me play this clip of Bill Maher. I've played it before, but I think it is worth repeating because he makes all the basic mistakes that pagans make when they are close-minded, like Bill Maher. He is extraordinarily narrow-minded. Christians, on the other hand, are extraordinarily open-minded, which is to say that a Bill Maher type allows only for natural explanations. An open-minded person allows for both natural explanations as well as supernatural explanations. Why? Because at the very beginning, we look at the universe and recognize that the universe had to have a cause. Every effect has to have a cause equal to or greater than itself. But if you're narrow-minded like Bill Maher, you have to have the untenable presupposition that nothing creates everything, that life comes from non-life, and that the life that comes from non-life produced morals. Anyway, here's Bill Maher.
But the thing that's really disturbing about Noah isn't the silly. It's that it's immoral. It's about a psychotic mass murderer who gets away with it, and his name is God. Genesis says God was so angry with himself for screwing up when he made mankind so flawed, that he sent the flood to kill everyone, everyone, men, women, children, babies. What kind of tyrant punishes everyone just to get back at the few he's mad at?
And this is a great example of why I have made this month our offer. The thing that we're emphasizing is the very issue that Bill Maher is addressing. Is God indeed a moral monster, or can you contextualize the God of the Old Testament properly? In other words, is there an answer to what Bill Maher has said? The rhetoric sounds good and people laugh and they think, oh yeah, the Bible's silly. And the God of the Bible, though he is fiction in Bill Maher's view, is a moral monster. The truth of the matter is, Bill Maher is an obscurantist. And unfortunately, because we do not know how to give an answer, we think oftentimes there is no answer. Now, let me hasten to add this. God is an altogether just and holy God. And because we don't have a proper conception of just how holy and righteous God is, we think that his actions are capricious. If we had a full understanding of the depravity of humanity, which would end up annihilating humanity on its own accord, and the holiness of God, we would never make this kind of statement, because like Narnia's Aslan, Yahweh, though gracious and compassionate, isn't to be trifled with. God gets jealous or angry precisely because he cares deeply. He's loved us with an everlasting love. He's drawn us with his loving kindness. And we don't have a full-orbed concept of the God of the Bible unless we recognize that he is a God of holiness and righteousness, as well as a God of mercy and love. I remember talking many years ago to a person who said to me, "My God is a God of love." And I indicated to that person that, yes, their God was a God of love, but their God also was a God which was merely a figment of their fertile imagination. The biblical God is not only a God of love, he is also a God of righteousness and holiness. And without, again, a full-orbed concept of who God is, we end up in the blind ditch of ignorance. Again, the book, Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God, is the perfect antidote for what you just heard. You can get your copy on the web, equip.org, or talk to our resource consultants, 888-7000 and the letter CRI. Again, for your gift, we'll send you the book. We'll be right back.
God is a bully, a murderer, and an oppressor. These are some of the most blatant and insidious lies about our Creator that exist today, yet millions believe them. That's why we want to help you stand for truth by sending you a copy of a powerful book by Paul Copan called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. Go online at equip.org with your gift and request it. Equip.org. Stay with us. There's more from Hank
coming up next.
New atheists and best-selling authors such as Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett often point to the God of the Old Testament to justify their claims about the implausibility of his existence and the stupidity of those who believe in God. But rather than fall for their rhetoric and emotive stereotypes presented by Dawkins and others, we must commit ourselves to become so familiar with the truth that we recognize lies about God instantly when they surface. Paul Copan's book called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God is a reassuring and helpful tool that will help you do this. That's why we hope you'll request a copy today as our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online at equip.org.
With the vast amount of information flooding the internet, how can you determine what's true? How can you be certain that what you're viewing is reliable? Well, equip.org is a safe haven with content you can trust. Content that has been well researched and designed to deepen your discernment skills and help equip you to defend the faith. At equip.org, you can search articles, books, and videos. Listen to the Bible Answer Man right from your computer. Or listen to an Ask Hank program where Hank takes just a few minutes to answer important questions about the Bible and Christianity. You can also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, read our blog, or receive special benefits by signing up for our weekly e-newsletter. Don't founder in the sea of misinformation. Make equip.org your homepage today. Again, the address is equip.org.
God is a bully, a murderer, and an oppressor. These are some of the most blatant and insidious lies about our Creator that exist today, yet millions believe them, and many Christians struggle to stand against them with truth. That's why we want to send you a copy of a powerful 252-page reassuring defense by Dr. Paul Copan called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God. Biblical, reasonable, and readable, Is God a Moral Monster? Equips you to stand for truth about God with gentleness and respect, prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks the reason for the hope that you have. So please request your copy today. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. So call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Many people carry around highly destructive beliefs about God that are endorsed by popular atheists of our day. And tragically, they never truly experience intimacy with the Creator of their souls. We want to help you see through any lies you might carry around about God with a powerful book by Paul Copan called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. Go online at equip.org with your gift and request it. Equip.org. Let's return to your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and we'll go right back to our phone callers. Next up is Dean. He's listening in Kissimmee, Florida, Sirius XM 131. Hi, Dean.
Hi, Hank. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I was wondering, Hank, I've been listening. I listened to you yesterday, and you were speaking about demons being fallen angels and not being able to take on physical form. In other words, they wouldn't have been able to procreate with humans. And like it says, in Genesis, you know, there's question about whether or not, I think it was the sons of God, they said, bred, took the women they chose and bred with them. Now, angels have taken on physical form in the Bible. So what's not to say that demons, which are fallen angels, would not be able to do the same?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. And the answer to that is that angels, by God's creative power and providence, can take on form because God has creative power. And therefore, in the Old Testament, you not only see angels taking on form, theologically that's called an angelophany, but you see God himself, though he has no form, God is spirit, taking on form. And so the Lord and two angels meet with Abraham on the plains of Mamre. So certainly God has creative power. There's no doubt about that from a Christian worldview. However, there's also no doubt from a Christian worldview that fallen angels do not have creative power, and therefore they cannot create bodies and fertile sperm and have sex with women and reproduce some kind of a hybrid. In fact, the whole notion flies in the face of biblical theology in which kinds reproduce after their own kinds. So the very notion of a non-physical, asexual being having sex with a woman is maybe popular in mythologies, but certainly not in theologies of the Bible.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Once again, you've helped me understand. I really enjoy your program.
Well, thank you so much for your call, and I appreciate your kind words. I think it's so important for us to recognize that ideas have consequences. And let me expand on that question for a second. Those who suppose that demons can have sex with women, well, if they could do it in ancient times, they could do it in modern times. But even worse, draw that out to its logical conclusion, and you see Jesus Christ saying, a spirit does not have flesh and bone as you see that I have. In other words, he's giving evidence for the fact that he has risen from the dead. If, in fact, demons can take on physical form, Christ's argument would be fallacious. It would be rendered null and void. It could have been demons masquerading as the resurrected Christ. Now what you have is the loss of epistemic warrant for the central event in the Christian faith, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Because one of the great proofs that Paul gives in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and he spends a lot of time on it, is Christ appeared, and he gave many convincing proofs that he was alive. So ideas, again, have consequences, and the idea that demons can have sex with women has all kinds of untoward consequences, including the fact that your wife could be having sex with a demon while you're at work. I mean, how would you know? If demons could have sex with women then, they can have sex with women now. So many ramifications. I don't think I need any further elaboration. Let's go back to the phone lines and talk to Jamie. Jamie is listening in Cotton Valley, Louisiana, on the web. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Hank. How are you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Just fine. I have a question. I was reading your book, Christianity in Crisis, and I was wondering, like those that teach heresy, I wonder if they're going to go to hell.
Well, let me say that I cannot judge anybody in terms of their eternal destiny. I don't know what they're going to do in terms of the end of their life, asking for forgiveness. But I can tell you this without any equivocation whatsoever, that what you have just said about Kenneth Copeland corresponds to reality. He is teaching heresy. And as a result of teaching heresy, he is dragging not only Christ's name through the mud, but dragging people into a worldview that is extraordinarily dangerous and deadly. And the book of James makes very clear that if you're a teacher, there's going to be a stricter judgment. And so all of us that have public platforms should quite literally quake in our boots, recognizing the gravity of the responsibility of communicating to masses of people, not only in congregations, but also through the airwaves. And so while I cannot judge him in terms of his eternal destiny, I can judge him in terms of his devastating doctrines that are, in fact, precisely as you say, heretical.
Well, I've got most of your books, and you're real knowledgeable about what you write, and I enjoy them, and I enjoy your program.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you saying that. I mean, think about what Kenneth Copeland is teaching people. He's teaching people that God is 6 feet, 2 inches to 6 feet, 3 inches tall, that God weighs around 200 pounds, that God has a hand span of around 9 inches. And then compare that to Mormon founder Joseph Smith, who says that if you were to see God today, you would see him like a man in form, like yourselves, in all the person, image, and very form of a man. Now, we criticize Mormonism, but as I said a week or so ago, I was traveling in my car, and I listened to BYU radio, and I listened to Christian radio, and quite frankly, I heard as much false teaching on Christian radio as I did on BYU radio. That's a sobering thought. And why? Because you have people like Kenneth Copeland, Joyce Meyer, Joel Osteen, polluting the airwaves. Most of you know I've written a book. In fact, it was just last month, The Osteenification of American Christianity, for that very reason. And I use the term Osteenification. I coined it for a reason, because he's the biggest of the bunch, twice as big as his nearest competitor. But Joyce Meyer, Kenneth Copeland, Benny Hinn, T.D. Jakes, Joseph Prince, a host of others are following in his train. In fact, in some cases, they set the tracks up to begin with, like a Kenneth Copeland. You can't make this stuff up. If the former doesn't shock you, consider how Kenneth Copeland claims that Adam was an exact duplicate of God. And then he says, not even subordinate to God. That parallels Joseph Smith's statement that God himself was once as we are now and is an exalted man. Not only does Copeland and company, not only do they teach that Adam and God were exact duplicates, but he also perpetuates the myth that Earth is an exact replica of the mother planet on which God lives. And all of that is but the tip of an insidious iceberg. Copeland blatantly pronounces God to be the greatest failure of all time. He brashly pontificates that Satan conquered Jesus on the cross. He proclaims that Christ went to hell as, these are his words, they're forever riveted in my mind, an emaciated, poured out, little, wormy spirit. And of course, he teaches a version of New Thought metaphysics where words create reality. Whatever you say becomes real. So if you can visualize something like an 82-foot yacht, one of the illustrations he gives you, and you can positively confess its reality, it will come into being. Now, words can have a devastating impact on another person. And thoughts and words are important, but they don't create reality, which is precisely what Copeland and company purport that they do. So when I talk about the Osteenification of American Christianity, this is not a little side quibble over irrelevant small matters. It is of utmost importance. This is one of the reasons that I want to put the book, The Osteenification of American Christianity, into as many hands as I possibly can. Because people like Copeland, Osteen, Prince, and many of the others that I mentioned, and I take no apology or make no apology for mentioning the names, they're communicating spiritual cyanide publicly over the airwaves, and therefore they should be rebuked publicly over the airwaves. But they are simply using Scripture to communicate whatever they want. And I would say that not even Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses treat the Scriptures with such utter disregard. They at least attempt to grapple with the biblical languages. Osteen does not so much as seriously consider the English text. And when Copeland does it, his gyrations and prostitution of the text are almost unthinkable. And that, of course, is what Osteenification is all about. It is conforming Scripture to cultural norms as opposed to allowing the plain reading of the text to transform. It's the glory of the cross exchanged for the paltry glory of consumerism. Provided the Osteenification of American Christianity in a lot of different ways, it's not only available now in book form, it's also available in audio form. In fact, you can get an audio download by going to equip.org. It's also available as CDs that you can listen to. Again, the Osteenification of American Christianity, it's an important resource, and it is available. You can get your copy for your gift. Check it out on the web, equip.org. So many hanging on. I'm going to stay right here for an extra hour. Once we go off the air, we'll continue taking your calls right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. So for the next hour, you can dial 888-ASK-HANK. That translates to 888-ASK-HANK, and I'll be taking your calls, 888-ASK-HANK, that translates to 888-275-4265. We'll continue taking your calls for the next hour, and I'll play my answers to your questions one day when I'm traveling.
You've been listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. To listen to the broadcast on the Internet, visit equip.org, where you'll also find a wealth of information and resources to equip you. To talk to a resource consultant, call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by the Christian Research Institute, a ministry supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. With the vast amount of information flooding the Internet, how can you determine what's true? How can you be certain that what you're viewing is reliable? Well, Equip.org is a safe haven with content you can trust. Content that has been well researched and designed to deepen your discernment skills and help equip you to defend the faith. At Equip.org, you can search articles, books, and videos. Listen to the Bible Answer Man right from your computer. Or listen to an Ask Hank program where Hank takes just a few minutes to answer important questions about the Bible and Christianity. You can also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, read our blog, or receive special benefits by signing up for our weekly e-newsletter. Don't founder in the sea of misinformation. Make Equip.org your homepage today. Again, the address is equip.org. New atheists and best-selling authors such as Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett often point to the God of the Old Testament to justify their claims about the implausibility of his existence and the stupidity of those who believe in God. But rather than fall for their rhetoric and emotive stereotypes presented by Dawkins and others, we must commit ourselves to become so familiar with the truth that we recognize lies about God instantly when they surface. Paul Copan's book called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God is a reassuring and helpful tool that will help you do this.
That's why we hope you'll request a copy today as our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online at equip.org.